Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, we are a week and a half away from the draft. How are we feeling?
It's exciting. It's exciting. It's, you know, it's like mid-December right now, and Christmas is right around the corner. You know, we're recording a day late from our usual time. So if you're listening to this Tuesday morning, hello, welcome. But yeah, the draft being right around the corner at this rate is just incredible. It is Christmas is almost here. And even tonight, we're going to have a very fun conversation because this is the fun time of evaluating the draft. These are the players that, I mean, it's like going back to our Madden franchise days, Josh. These are the players you always wanted to, because you felt like you could do more fun things with these individuals when you're playing the game. In real life, they're the more fun guys to watch because they're running on the offensive side of the ball. It's exciting times. It's exciting times for sure.
Tonight, we're talking about wide receivers and running backs. And we often talk about weaponizing Josh Allen. Josh Allen is coming off of an MVP level season and a season in which the story around Josh Allen was he didn't have enough help. And I think we're going to get into some ways he can get some help this season, Luca. But let's get into that right off the bat. Let's talk maybe specifically wide receiver. What do you think the Bills' appetite for adding a wide receiver is right now? For those that don't know, the Bills saw Mac Hollins leave this offseason. He went to the New England Patriots. They saw Amari Cooper leave. He's still a free agent. I suppose that's an option they could tap into. It doesn't seem like that's something that's going to be imminent. And beyond that, they brought in Joshua Palmer from the Chargers. Nothing else has changed. They did extend Khalil Shakir over the offseason. What do you think the Bills' appetite is to be aggressive in adding a receiver to this room?
It's not desperate, but it's a little bit underneath that. And I would call it, for lack of a better term, welcomed. I think the wide receiver position, we've mentioned it a couple times leading into this, even in previous episodes. It's not quite there. And look, you mentioned Josh Allen's coming off his MVP season. He did it with a room that feels very similar to the one he's now walking into a season of, if it started today, just like it. He can make it happen. Luckily, 17 is a very special individual on a football field and even off the football field that ultimately he can make whatever you give him at its absolute best perform well. Now, that being said, get him more help. And I don't think Bean or McDermott or anyone is sitting there going, you know what? It wouldn't be anything better to give Josh Allen help. It's, of course, you have your franchise guy. You just gave him even more money and got a bottle of Pappy Winkle 15 out of it. So overall, get him a little bit more help it through creative methods, right? And the draft is, there's no better way to do it than the draft, honestly, when it comes to finances, when it comes to just potential down the road for the future and everything that it can be. You can get someone potentially that can make some sort of impact immediately, especially with the way it's currently built on the roster at that position, but then even have it for years to come at a stable, you know, low financial number until eventually you need to start paying someone. So there's no better place to kind of figure it out than the draft. But overall, whether it's that or even post-draft, see what else is on the market. I think adding to this receiver room is definitely what I would define as welcomed by the front office.
Yeah. God, what's the definition of insanity? Doing something over and over again, expecting a different result. I realize Josh Allen won the MVP last year, but my goodness, how many times do we watch these Bills games thinking, as great as Josh Allen is, imagine what it'd be like if he had better receivers to throw to. I like Khalil Shakir quite a bit. I think there is a world where you can live in where you can think Keon Coleman could become a number one wide receiver. I don't particularly live in that world. I think Keon Coleman is going to eventually be a very nice piece in this offense, but I don't sit here with dreams and hopes of him becoming the future number one. And I know there's a segment of fans that are still holding out hope that Dalton Kincaid becomes a great game-changing tight end. I think there's truth in the middle. I think Dalton Kincaid can certainly be better than he's been the first 2 years. There's reason to believe that injuries played a part in his lack of production last year, but his inability to block impacts how teams can defend him. And he doesn't get the George Kittle treatment, where if you put a defensive back on him, you can really get paid for in the running game because Kittle's going to block him into the ground. Kincaid hasn't proven that yet, so it just allows defenses to defend him easier. Luca, we are 5 minutes into this show, and I feel myself getting angry. I've been the one, and Luca too, beating the drum of, hey, the Colts, the Indianapolis Colts, when they had Peyton Manning, they drafted Marvin Harrison in the first round before Manning got there. They drafted Reggie Wayne in the first round. They drafted Anthony Gonzalez in the first round. They drafted Edgerrin James in the first round. They drafted Joseph Addai in the first round. They drafted Donald Brown in the first round. They were continuously feeding the pipeline of receivers and skill position players to surround Peyton Manning with. And Josh Allen still has not had a first round wide receiver to throw to on the Bills, if you don't count Kelvin Benjamin, a receiver that the Bills have drafted in the first round. I understand Dalton Kincaid was a first round pick. And I cannot believe for the life of me, Luke, and it seems like there is a good majority of this, there is a segment of fans that are looking at Joshua Palmer as some sort of answer. This team lost to Amari Cooper and Mac Hollins, and they added Joshua Palmer. Cool. I understand he's a good separator by some of the charts you see out there, but Joshua Palmer is not some difference-making wide receiver. Every team in the league has somebody like a Joshua Palmer. Let's not pretend like he is going to come in and change the shape of this wide receiver room. His career high in Los Angeles was 700 yards. I think his maximum touchdowns for any season was 4 touchdowns. He is just a guy. This reminds me of the Curtis Samuel chatter last year. It's like, oh, he's never really been a difference maker anywhere, but trust me, we're going to tap into it, and he's going to be the guy, and he couldn't beat out Mac Hollins all of last year. Weaponize Josh Allen. Let's go get some receivers. Let's make it to where when we play the Chiefs in the playoffs, we have somebody that can threaten the defense. I love Khalil Shakir, but I don't love him as a number one. Let's have somebody out there that can scare defenses. Is that guy in the draft? Is that guy going to be there for the Bills at pick 30? I don't know. I don't love this receiver class nearly as much as last year, but I want the Bills to continue to be aggressive. And I just can't live in a world where we try to talk ourselves into in 2025, after watching the Bills continue to fall short in big spots, thinking that Joshua Palmer solves anything other than putting another average name on a very average depth chart. Luca, I think the Amari Cooper trade last year was a sign that Brandon Bean realized pretty early on that everybody eats is really only good if you have 3 or 4 people that can get open. And he realized at that point he had one person in Khalil Shakir that can consistently get open. And that's why he went out and traded for Amari Cooper. I don't expect Brandon Bean to sit on his hands. I do think wide receiver is going to be a priority, maybe not the top priority on draft day. But if this Bills team runs it back with a wide receiver group that looks like this, with no significant addition before September, I'm going to be extremely discouraged, and I'm going to be fuming at everybody that tries to tell me, but wait till you see what Joshua Palmer can do, because I have a pretty good idea what he can do, and it's not changed the game.
I don't have too much more to add on that. That was, you're fired up, and we haven't even started talking about prospects yet. Boy, wait until some of these opinions start flowing. I will say I'm 100% on board with you, especially the latter part of your point. And I think the Amari Cooper trade, the recognition that there is just not enough talent. I wanted to say receiver, and it primarily is receiver, of course, but I am lumping, you know, Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, even into this conversation, pass catchers. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough talent. And we heard the reports during the combine that supposedly they really think the best is yet to come with Dalton Kincaid. That's great. You're already 2 years in on this Dalton Kincaid situation. Maybe he really was dealing with something more than what we believed it to be last season, like it also was reported. But until it is factual that he is a legitimate pass-catching weapon, I'm not going to sit here and assume that it is good enough. So put him aside. You said it right. Khalil Shakir is the only guy who he consistently goes out there, separates, makes plays, can do everything you need at a pass catching position that it ticks. Keon Coleman had that blip where it was really looking like something great, gets hurt, never really kind of recovered out of that after even when he came back. Mac Hollins just somehow caught fire in his way. It's not literally caught fire, but he just seemed all of a sudden become a reliable option at the receiver position late once Keon Coleman got hurt with that injury. But you can't hope that Joshua Palmer, as you said, is magically going to supplement that and some, and just this guy's going to be it. If Joshua Palmer does do that, I don't think Josh or myself are going to be sitting here complaining about it and being like, God, I can't believe we didn't see this coming. I don't think Brandon Bean's even seeing that, though. That would be the point of this. As you said, there's nothing in his past, in his career history, that indicates to you that he's anything other than one of the guys in the rotation to do something in a role. That's great. You need guys like that to fill a roster. Depth matters in the sense of you need other guys that can step in to fill roles, sure. But as someone that absolutely hates when I hear the depth is great or the versatility is great, it's like sometimes you just need a dog. You need a guy. And if your guy right now is Khalil Shakir, that is okay. But I'm with you as well. He's not your true one where all things aside, like Khalil Shakir hasn't really been injured too much. He got banged up last season. And when he was out, we really saw what the problem was. Because when Khalil Shakir was out, we saw that Ravens game when he got hurt and had to leave. And then you saw the Texans game after that where he was just not playing the entire time. And Josh Allen, in an MVP season, couldn't find anyone and had his career worst game in that Houston game as a passer. It's you need to do something. It's not desperation level. I said it's very welcomed to bolster the receiver group, get some more boundary weapons, and help Josh Allen through this a little bit more. Because yes, he's an MVP. Yes, he's a guy, but this is a team sport. And you even hear the greats of the sport talk about how much all individuals on the field matter for success. A quarterback can't do anything unless he has great ones around him. He needs a good offensive line. He needs a good receiver core. He needs backfield help with a complimentary running back. All of these things matter. And right now, when you look at the Bills offense, the clear immediate and future need right now for this Bills team is receiver and pass catchers in general. They are lacking in that department greatly, and they need to do something in some way to kind of get it going, both for the now and for the later. And, you know, that's going to steer us right into what we're talking about tonight, because yes, I'm with you as well when it comes to this might not be quite the same class as last season, but I still think there are guys, especially for the Bills, that can be impactful enough both right now, but then also for years to come, to hopefully mold a much better receiver core for years to come and can be true dogs for this team moving forward.
I don't know if the Bills will be able to find an alpha in this draft. I don't know how many there are. And I do think that the ones that could be viewed as such will probably be off the board before the Bills get there and until otherwise. And we are now a week and a half away from the draft, depending on when you're looking at this. They're still starting Dane Jackson at outside cornerback. So that has to be priority number one. And there's obviously a lot of good defensive linemen to take. But I could see this draft for the Bills being very similar to what the Packers did a couple years ago, where they got Jaden Reed and Romeo Doubs in the same draft. Now, look, you would love to get that kind of return on mid-round picks, and there's no guarantee you can do that. But more so what I think for the Bills is maybe they take a couple stabs in the second through fourth rounds just to kind of get some diverse skill sets to this group. I don't know. I guess Joshua Palmer is the best deep threat on this team right now, which I think says more about this team than it does about Joshua Palmer. I don't want to bring up the past, but there was a segment of people that kept telling me last year, people that I respect in these Bills content streets, that, oh, Curtis Samuel is going to be the deep threat for this team. And I was like, well, the metrics for his career don't really indicate that he's a deep threat, despite the fact that he ran like a 4.35 at his pro day or whatever when he was coming out of college, however many years ago. I'm like, well, look at his skill set. He's clearly a deep threat. Well, clearly he's not. And then the Bills couldn't find a way to get him on the field. So you have to hope that the Bills can get more out of Curtis Samuel in year two. You have to hope for continued development from Keon Coleman and Khalil Shakir. You have to hope that Joshua Palmer is this hidden gem that folks see. And you have to hope for a continued growth from Dalton Kincaid to really have a belief that this team's going to be anything better than, I would say, below average at the skill group positions. But certainly they can take a step here in this draft to do that. So, Luca, you put out some rankings today for the wide receivers. I know you do a lot of work on this group. In your opinion, how good is this group top to bottom? And would you consider this a star, a group that has some stars in it? Or was it more of a, maybe you can find a starter in this group, but not necessarily a game changer? Is it a deep class? How would you define this class if you were going to give like a quick little overview to somebody that hasn't been scouting the draft as much as you have?
I think first and foremost, they have one of the most unique stars. We talked about him already in a DB class, but he's also a unique star in the sense of a wide receiver prospect. So you have that top end, just generational talent. I think, so I did, you said rankings. I did it in tiers, and I feel like I'm going to do tiers moving forward. I kind of like this, where I put guys where I believe them. And what people need to understand is tier, of course, is not necessarily direct, you know, round affiliation. Just for anyone that even believes that, where it's like, hey, you're tier two, I believe you to be a second round guy. That's not how tiers work. Tiers, though, are, you have generational tier one. And honestly, I really tempted with the idea of putting him tier zero, just because he is an individual that stands out unlike any other wide receiver prospect we've seen, not necessarily just because of who he is as a wide receiver, but just what he is as a talent. We've already gone into Travis Hunter at great length in a previous episode. Check it out if you didn't hear. Tier two, I think I have a little bit of a different opinion of most, but overall, those are still your guys. Those are still guys I believe that are absolute potential dogs at wide receiver one positions moving forward. I think they're very different who I have there. But overall, that's where I put that. Tier three, though, is kind of where I cut it off. And that's a total now of five wide receivers I put out there where it's like, I would grade these guys first round talents. You get to tier three. In tier three, there's a pair of guys that I grade them first round talent on their potential, but I'm not drafting them in the first round with the expectation that they're going to hit the ground running per se. They might take a little bit of time. You know, something like you saw with a Keon Coleman like individual where, you know, they weren't, they could make a splash play here or there, but overall it definitely felt like they were getting up to NFL speed before then maybe figuring it out eventually. They could absolutely figure it out quicker than I think. And that's why I give them that first round grade, because overall I think their ceiling is very much there as a great wide receiver in this league, but that's where it is. And then once you get to tiers four and five, those are no longer guys that I'm willing to take in the first round. Those are no longer guys that I believe have elite ceilings. But tier four are still guys that I actually think can be legitimate weapons for years and years to come. Tier five is just finally where you start to get, in my opinion, where you have concerns, but they can still be good to great players. The one omission that I think was shocking to a lot of individuals is Kyle Williams. I think Kyle Williams is just one that, for me, I don't see it the same as most. I'm willing to say if he works out great and he gets drafted highly, that's great. I just think there's something in him that I don't see. And there's a lot of other individuals that I just, in these tiers, again, I really tried to keep down the number as well, though, I will say. Tier five, though, could probably go as deep as 12 guys. I mean, there's a long list. I just kind of cut it off as five for the graphic. I'll just put it out there. But ultimately, yeah, tiers one, two, and three are really the first round grade guys that, where you can pallet it. Tier three is even one that I could see bleeding to that back end of the first round. Tier four is where I finally have that kind of cutoff where I'm like, I don't think I trust myself inside the top 32 taking this guy and believing that they can really have that impact that you want out of a first round guy. But overall, and that's not just for the now, that's even for the future, but they still have a lot of upside to them that I like them above the rest. To define the group as a whole, it's not the deepest of class, but it's also not the most top heavy either. There's this, if I had to really break it down, you have your generational being Travis Hunter. You have this chunk that we'll call, it's not quite your neighbors and Brian Thomas Jr. It's somewhere right after them. And it's a good chunk of players. And then you have a large field of, I'll call it yeah, buts. There's a lot of yeah, buts in this draft. And those, there's nothing wrong with a lot of those guys. Maybe, well, there might be some stuff wrong with some of these guys like an Isaiah Bond, but we don't have to get into that. But overall, the yeah, buts are kind of definitely need to be in the right situation, need proper coaching, need to just be able to fit whatever's going on and just get them to be the best that they can be overall. And I think you normally, I think you would get 10 deep before you get to those level of guys. It feels like in an average class this year, you don't really even get to 10. I mean, over here it's 3, 5, 8, you get 8 deep and it's already, you're at the yeah, but so not the deepest, but overall, I still think there's a lot of guys here and we'll get into it that I do like. And there's guys that I think I like more than a lot of people for whatever reason, for the Bills' sake, that I could genuinely believe they could carve out a role that's very much needed in this team. Maybe not even where it feels like, but I don't know if I'm just seeing it differently or understanding it differently, but there's some exciting prospects in this draft that sitting in the back end of the first round, very, very happy with. And I would be very intrigued by them if they started to kind of fall back into their area.
I think this entire class, and when I say class, not just receiver class, but this draft class is so fascinating because much like we talked about on the defensive line show, it's like there's one or two guys at the top that are undeniable. But I cannot remember a class in recent memory where we're talking about first round prospects that are so volatile. And there's so many different ways people view them. I mean, even looking back at recent receiver classes, you know, the year that it was like Drake London, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, everybody knew who the top receivers were. It was just really a matter of what order do you want to take them in, Christian Watson. There is so much volatility, and from people that are respected. You mentioned Kyle Williams. Chris Sims has him as his second receiver in the entire class. And there's people out there and sites that we definitely respect that don't even have him as a top 15 receiver in this class. It's wild to me. Luther Burden is another guy that seems to be all over the map. Isaiah Bond, a little bit of a different case, but even before that came up, there were people that weren't as high on him, think maybe he's just like a one-dimensional deep threat. Let's go through your tiers, Luca. You have Travis Hunter is in a tier by himself. We got into him a little bit last week. We don't have to do that this week. He's a special, special player. The Bills won't sniff him. I think the most interesting thing is what will teams do with him when they get their hands on him. At tier two, two very fascinating names, Luther Burden and Tet McMillan. Both these guys are fascinating for different reasons. I think, in my opinion, as somebody who watched a lot of Luther Burden in college, did not have a great quarterback situation. I'm not a Brady Cook guy. I think he looks a lot like Diggs to me. I think he can run the whole route tree. I think he has phenomenal hands. And, you know, I hate when you say he has it, because to me, that's just like, you can't think of anything better to say. When Mizzou needed a big play, they would throw it to him in triple coverage over anybody else. It was just drop back, where's Burden? And he made the play. There's a dog, it's a gamer, all the stuff that you hear that kind of roll your eyes. But if you watch enough Mizzou football, you knew who the go-to guy was. The defense certainly knew who it was, and it didn't matter. Why do you think Luther Burden has not been as popular in so many people's eyes? And why do you think that so many view him as more of like a one-dimensional slot receiver? I don't see that.
The slot receiver thing I'll get into in a little bit. I very confused personally on that one. I think where he's falling right now, though, is primarily due to everyone can't ignore this past season's tape. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about how quitting on routes, quitting on plays, just he was bored. Like, look, he looked bored out there at times, whether it was because it was a one-dimensional offense as a whole that he was not intrigued by. They had quarterback injuries at one point. I mean, there was a lot of variables when it came to the Mizzou offense that you could see where Luther Burden just felt disinterested. And for whatever reason, I mean, it's not whatever reason, for reason, there's a lot of evaluators out there that just can't look away from that. They find that to be a massive red flag. And it's something that they're very concerned with. And I had a conversation with someone in another Discord, one that you're familiar with another individual, when we were kind of having wide receiver conversations during Masters Sunday. And I brought up the fact that I love Luther Burden. If after Travis Hunter, Luther Burden's my personal favorite. Everything you said about him is that and more. Like, hands every time when the ball's coming to him. He absolutely wants it before anyone else. He can run pretty much everything you ask him to do, but ultimately my favorite thing about watching games of Mizzou with Luther Burden in it, even this season, the same one that people are being critical of, where he's quitting and stuff like that, in fourth quarters, you always saw him. The ball was coming to him, and he was getting it against legitimate SEC defenses, people.
People forget that.
He is winning the ball and creating separation when needed. He's doing everything you possibly could ask in a season where he's quitting on the team and quitting on the play. It's bullshit. I don't care. If you take a Luther Burden and you plug him into a Bills, a Chiefs, an Eagles, think about winning cultures and winning organizations. I could never imagine a Luther Burden doing the same thing that you thought you saw at Mizzou at one of those places. He's going to come in and do his best every week. And if you're getting the best version of Luther Burden, watch that tape and tell me why the hell he isn't the second best receiver in this draft class. That's my opinion. I think the Diggs comp is an interesting one. I really do like a Garrett Wilson comp for him. Mm-hmm. There's a lot about him where he's not the biggest. He's not the most explosive, but he's got so many tools in his bag. And also he can create a lot more space and opportunity for himself, even with what his package is, that it's like, there is just so much to love about him that, I mean, you've seen mocks out there and you see individuals that believe he's going to fall at the very back end of the first round. If there's not another guy that a Brandon Bean is head over heels in love with, and he sees a Luther Burden falling down to 25, 26, it's like, how are you not making calls for that? Because that is someone, day one comes in and you could tell you have something different at the wide receiver position right there. And then you plug him in and you move it. And Luther Burden is, I had him, that I will say my tears, they don't necessarily, it's not scripture when it comes to Luther Burden over Tet if I were to rank him one through, but at the same time, in this case, it actually is. I like Luther Burden as my second best receiver. Like, I just think he's the absolute X factor in this class outside of Travis Hunter, and is the most comfortable piece of any receiver that I would take in the first round. I love everything about his game. And if you're telling me that his problems are giving up on plays, a little bit of a diva, things like that, it's like, yeah, well, I mean, it from a Bills lens, we brought in a diva and we got a hell of a few years out of it and it worked great. Now imagine if we got Diggs, if that's your comp at 21 years old, and you were able to just roll it out from 21 years old, that would be something special with a Josh Allen at quarterback. And Luther Burden ain't quitting on routes with Josh Allen. Keon Coleman learned that very quick in the NFL. Imagine a Luther Burden also doing it. I can't stop gushing over this Luther Burden guy. He is just unbelievable. And it's in my own opinion, criminal, where some individuals also peg him into the slot and be like, oh, it's because he's got that quick twitch off the line separation, and that's where he's going to find his wheelhouse. It's like, I heard Daniel Jeremiah say that earlier, and I was shocked. For someone like him, who, like, you know, those Daniel Jeremiahs, your Chris Sims, all these guys, they're just, their job is to just watch tape on tape on tape on tape. How do you watch Luther Burden tape and walk away and go, yeah, he seems like he'd be kind of a fun slot guy, a really good slot guy in the NFL? It's like, this guy can be X. This guy could be your wide receiver one. This guy could be everything you possibly want him to be. Because if you just, all you need to do is watch the fourth quarter of every game he's ever played in so far. And that's like, yeah, that's a wide receiver one. That's a dog. That's a guy. I know you said you don't like saying it, but I love saying it when it comes to a guy like it. He has it. And mm-hmm. That is what this team, especially for the Bills, absolutely needs. And honestly, any team would be in love to have a Luther Burden at the wide receiver position to do whatever they possibly want him to do.
I would sit here today and tell you, I think he's going to be the fifth receiver off the board. And I think that's such a mistake. If you count Travis Hunter as a receiver, Hunter first, whatever you classify him as, I think McMillan and Williams, Kyle Williams, go ahead of him. And I think Matthew Golden goes ahead of him. I really do. I just kind of reading the tea leaves. That's what I think. And then from there, I think you're starting to look at guys like Jalen Noel. who's some other ones I'm missing?
Jalen Royal, you're missing
Royal. Kind
of
Royal.
Ibuka is who you're kind of omitting as well.
Yeah. I could see, I really could see it. And I'm just saying, I like Kyle Williams. I do. I want the Bills to take a receiver. If the Bills stick at 30 and Kyle Williams falls to him and they take him, I'll be happy because they took a receiver. Sure. If the Bills stick at 30 and they take Kyle Williams and at pick 31, the Chiefs go up and take Luther Burden. I tell you, like, he played right next to Kansas City. They have a lot of intel on Mizzou. Be ready. I have, you know, there's a lot of folks in Chieflands that have been talking about Luther Burden since about October. Rasheed Rice,
You think my reaction was bad when the Bills traded back for Xavier Worthy?
We're about to go viral again. you know, take Matthew Golden. Matthew Golden. I watched a lot of Texas this year, folks. Either Quinn Ewers is the worst pro-ready quarterback that we've seen in a while. I think he's pretty bad for the amount of hype he's getting. Or Matthew Golden is like the biggest non-factor against good competition. You're going to take him over Luther Burden? Was Matthew Golden even the best receiver on his team? Not to my eyes. It was Isaiah Bond. Well, he has a different issue going on, but good Lord. And then I don't know. Kyle Williams, I guess. I don't know what his like superpower is. I'm taking Luther Burden over everybody that's not Travis Hunter. And if you want to tell me Tet McMillan is your guy, great. I realize guys that size that can catch contested balls don't grow on trees, and you start thinking about what you can do with him in the NFL. I get it. I get it 100%. You're probably not going to go wrong if you get Tet McMillan. I think the NFL is drastically overthinking Luther Burden, and it sure seems like that he's going to fall into round two, and somebody I think is going to get a nice steal the same way that the Bengals did when T. Higgins fell to the top of round two to them because people started reading way too much into his measurables. All right, Luca, let's go back to your list here. The other guy in tier two was Tet McMillan. We're going to speed it up a little bit. What is your read on him? I know you don't love him, but I know you, looking at this through an NFL lens, see a lot of qualities that the NFL will like.
Let's emphasize the start. Through an NFL lens, this thing right here doesn't matter when I talk about Tet McMillan. I'm sick of anyone coming at me about that, just for the record. Yes, he went to the worst college in the world. But Tet McMillan's an interesting one because you say it the best, honestly. He is everything that NFL evaluators and scouts and execs drool over. He has the size. He doesn't necessarily have that true 40 breakaway speed to go with that size, but 4.55 is nothing to sneeze at, for instance. And overall, his hands are still very large. He's got all of these measurables, as well as having some silky tape out there that you're like, man, this guy can do everything. My biggest problem with him is, a lot of the things you think he excels at, and a lot that's like boxing out defenders over the middle, great on his in cuts. Oh, by the way, he can run some whip routes too while you're at it. That's a lot of things you see out there about him. It's like, okay, but the thing that I have a problem with is when I would watch Big 12 football, for instance, and I would see Tet McMillan, and they try to shove University of Arizona down everyone's throat this year early on in the season until they realize how bad of a team they were. When you watched him against Kansas State, who didn't have the greatest secondary, not a bad one, but they were undersized a little bit. You watched him against Arizona State in the final game of the season when they got pounded. And Arizona State doesn't have the biggest, although they got dogs, but they weren't the biggest DBs either. That speaking of Matthew Golden and Isaiah Bond, were having their way with for a long stretch of that Peach Bowl game later on. A Tet McMillan should be dominating these matchups. And he would against the lesser class and sometimes, but also your 10-yard outs and things like that, things that a big framed receiver should easily be winning, especially at the caliber that he's supposed to be. I didn't see that dominance. You would see moments where he was playing, it felt smaller than what his frame actually is. And it's just everything we talked about Luther Burden, the dog mentality, just everything about it. Best hands, honestly, in the draft. I say that even potentially above Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter has great hands too. Like, come on, what are we talking about? But Luther Burden's an absolute freak when it comes to just being a dog. Tet McMillan, I don't get that same vibe from. I think you see a lot of flashes with his size and frame and all of that. And you're like, this guy is just he's built for the NFL. But I don't really find him to be a true dog in the sense of, I think he'll be a dominant wide receiver one. I think he can be if, you know, if someone flips the switch on him and just figures it out, sure, you have the size to do it. And that's why he's in my tier two. But realistically, that's my knock on him, really, is I just saw enough where it wasn't shocking to me. And honestly, it felt underwhelming with a Tet McMillan that it feels like you need to get him in a circumstance that someone can create that dog in him to really maximize what you have in that physical frame and size and everything about it, with the potential of being an alpha. It's all potential to me. I don't see any of it really when you watch what he has going into this draft.
Yeah. You know who he reminds me of? You have to go way back in the Wayback Machine. He kind of reminds me of Keyshawn Johnson. You know, remember Keyshawn Johnson was the number one draft pick in a draft class that included Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens wasn't considered a great draft prospect. He was third round pick. Eric Molds, Marvin Harrison, Isaac Bruce. Keyshawn Johnson was the number one pick. And he was like a two-time All-American in college. He played at USC when they were really going strong. 6'5". And he had a good career in the NFL. Like, he never was the best receiver in football. But I think because of what we thought he should have been, it's almost like he carried that number one draft pick status. And I think he was always thought of as better than he really was on the field. In a lot of ways, I think that's Tet McMillan. I think as highly as he was rated as a recruit, the unique size and physicality he has, I think you watch him and you're like, I think you're using the bias in your brain of, he was such a good recruit, look how big and physical he should be. And then you watch him play and you're kind of left a little underwhelmed. But I do think that NFL is going to love him. You know, he does win those contested catches and, you know, open when you're not open. I don't know if that's sustainable in the NFL, but I think he's going to go very early in this draft. Luca, let's talk about your tier three. We have Igbuka and we have Matthew Golden. We talked a little bit about Golden here. You can pile onto that. I know you and I aren't as high on him as others, but what do you like about those two?
I'll group them together. Because I really feel very similar about both of them. And Matthew Golden and Igbuka. So Igbuka was someone that I really was on my radar because I really am shocked that he went back to Ohio State this year. Paid off for him. He won a national championship. But, you know, I thought he was going into last year's draft, and I thought he was going to be one of those nice guys to fall after, you know, the big four that we had talked about. I really slotted him in as that fifth receiver. I think, you know, looking back a little bit, maybe that was a little high, but at the same time, I think this year he was okay. He just got outshined by a guy who's going to be a top five pick in a draft 2 years from now at his own school. Name's slipping my mind right now. God, how am I forgetting? Not in college football mode right now when it comes to that. But anyways, Igbuka and Golden, though, are two guys that I mentioned the tier three are still guys I'm comfortable in round one. But ultimately, I don't know if they necessarily have that true dominant number one receiver ceiling anymore. They have that really solid, you know, boundary receiver, slot guy, whatever role you can truly get the best out of them. And ultimately, I find myself, and this goes a little bit more for Golden. Golden was at least a guy it felt like in clutch times was being looked at. So you mentioned how Isaiah Bond might have been the better receiver, it felt like, watching Texas games. But it also felt like Golden was the guy they would go to in crunch times. It felt like that was their guy. Emeka Igbuka was that guy until all of a sudden they found this other guy. Like, it was the same thing. It's like, okay, there's something here if they're really trusting them with big plays and big moments. And I do believe that there's a lot to their game. Just the only thing that I think they might not have in them is just due to kind of, they're not overly large. They're not freaks. They might struggle when it comes to, you know, your NFL press and just kind of getting off the line and getting that space as quick as they can. I think Golden might be able to do that a little bit more just because he has the actual raw speed to him in that element. But overall, I think both of them might find that to be a little bit of a struggle, where I would believe them to not necessarily be those instant impact kind of guys where they can hit the ground running. But in the right circumstance, and if you're the Bills, in my opinion, for instance, if we're walking away with Matthew Golden and Emeka Igbuka at 30, no complaints whatsoever. I think they're instant impact guys, at least at some capacity, while they're figuring it out at the NFL level. But they're really just the last of the few when it comes to my, you know, an understanding of can be wide receiver one material. I'm not saying necessarily high end wide receiver one, but ultimately they can still be very facilitative, I guess is the way to put it. You know, they can definitely do that job for you. If I guess it goes more with Igbuka, in my opinion, they can do everything intermittent, deep, short, whatever you need from a boundary, from a slot. But it's not going to be something that it's not a Luther Burden. It's not a Tet McMillan where it's like this guy's dominating his position. He's dominating his side of the field. I just think you're kind of having to be a little bit more creative from an NFL perspective, an NFL offensive mind to be able to create those opportunities for them at least early on. And then maybe they find that switch that flips and ultimately they can actually learn the tricks of the trade and create. I do think Igbuka can create separation through breaks. You can see that it's something unlike what we saw with, remember how we were very anti, I don't want to say we're anti, but we weren't the biggest Olave and Garrett Wilson fans because we just thought they were winning on athleticism.
Yeah.
I feel like with Igbuka, you actually can see a little bit of that talent in their breaks, in his breaks, creating the space, getting it in time, like everything you want that it's like, okay, this can work in the NFL. And I do believe it wasn't him just depending on raw athleticism to create his ability to be open. There's something there that I like. I can't really absolutely pinpoint it, but honestly, it just feels NFL level to the point of I'm like, okay, now I understand why this is potentially a first round guy. That's where I really, with these two individuals, they don't pop, but they're very solid players that easily can be defined as first round talents that I like them enough to separate from the rest of the field, I guess is the way to put it.
Another guy that could have been a first round talent and probably was tracking toward that before the season started was Isaiah Bond. I think a lot of people thought that with Xavier Worthy and AD Mitchell moving on last year, that Bond was going to step up and be that number one guy at Texas. Luca mentioned it really ended up being Matthew Golden, at least on the stat sheet. Bond did not have a great year this year, his junior year. Had less than impressive workouts, interviews, and then he has a legal issue that I don't really want to get into on this show, but it does not look good for him. You know, we saw a Bills punter go through something similar where it didn't look good and it turned out to be okay. So I just would tell you, like, withhold all judgment from all angles, but, you know, these teams, these draft picks are precious, and these teams spend a lot of money on intel, and I wouldn't be stunned, Luke, if he goes undrafted based on some of the information that's out there. I would be stunned if he goes before day three at this point. What do you think about where you would be comfortable with your team or any team taking Isaiah Bond, knowing what we know and then knowing what we honestly don't know?
Isaiah Bond is a fascinating one when it comes to, I mean, he's the definition of risk reward. That's what he is. I think you have to truly trust your due diligence, your background checks, your research, anyone you can talk to, figure it out, talk to his people, talk to anyone else when it comes to legal experts or whatnot that might understand the situation that's going on or multiple situations. But even just you have to talk to the player and see if his head's in the right space for what you need. He is a day two talent, even bordering day one, it feels like, if you were to really get that ceiling potential out of him. But there's just so much going on that, yeah, you said it perfectly. Draft picks are so precious to teams. And when you're talking about day one, day two picks, those are everything. I mean, you see legitimate NFL starters getting traded for a second or a third round pick.
Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, like those picks matter. So when you think about just the value alone of what that is, are you willing to risk it on an Isaiah Bond who it feels like there's a lot going on in between his ears and a lot of legal issues and whatever else is going on that it's hard to justify as an NFL organization spending on one of those picks where you could have turned around and gotten a Stephon Diggs. You could have done something else with it instead of doing that. I can see Isaiah Bond in all reality being like a back end round three guy where an NFL team is just not willing to let him be on the board reshuffle going into day three. That would be kind of where I peg him to be. Realistically, though, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he ends up, like you said, day three, or even slides to the point where you're really just wondering, you know, if Isaiah Bond is sitting there in the fifth round, that's where you're getting the reality of, okay, something's up. NFL teams don't trust it. No one likes the situation, and it wouldn't be surprising if it's undrafted. At this moment in time, I'd be surprised if he's undrafted. I think the potential is too much that someone's eventually going to take the risk on it. A day three pick makes sense for a lot of teams, I imagine. But overall, like I said, I could even see it where, whether it's a team already sitting there at the back end of round three or someone trading in just to make sure it's not there when the reshuffle occurs going into day three, I could see that round three kind of selection of Isaiah Bond happening, because it's the potential and the ceiling. It's, if you could eliminate any off-field concerns and eliminate whatever else is going on with Bond, I would probably peg him just in tier four, and I would really want to be flirting around with that tier three kind of category for him. Like, it's his straight line speed's undeniable. His talent is clearly there. You know, I think he's a little bit raw. I think he's a lot like, your draft crush, Jalen Hyatt. He feels like a Jalen Hyatt to me a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with a Jalen Hyatt, especially if we're talking tier four, border tier three guy, and you're talking day two. Day two Jalen Hyatt sounds great to a lot of teams. But there's just too much going on around him that it'd be interesting to see where he ends up, but day three makes a lot of sense if drafted at all.
I just keep going back to when the Bills had the situation with their punter, Matt Araiza. And, you know, the stuff that Bond is being accused of is similar, to the extreme of what was being accused of Araiza. But you start thinking about, unless you can get him on the commissioner exempt list, which means you can have him away from your building, you're no longer, you can just keep saying, we're focused on the people that are here kind of thing. You're inviting so many distractions into your building until this is resolved. So it's going to be something teams have to wrestle with. I would not imagine that the Bills are a team that's going to even toy around with that. So I don't think he's somebody that'll be on the Bills. All right, Luca, we have about 15 minutes or so left. We the Bills are obviously in good shape at running back. They have James Cook for another year. Obviously their contract situation is stalled. They drafted Ray Davis last year. They're obviously high on him. They have Ty Johnson, who they believe is the best third down running back in the sport, but they're in a unique situation where, one, it seems like they're at an impasse with their number one running back. Do you want to pay a running back in the NFL in 2025 top tier money? I realize maybe for some, the conversation has changed since the Eagles won with Saquon Barkley, but I would say, one, Saquon Barkley is a unique talent that you don't see very often. And he got dropped into a situation where they were truly a running back away. You could say very similar for the Ravens with Derrick Henry. I don't know that necessarily the Bills are a team that you think of, like, even if they added Saquon Barkley, what does that really do to the dynamic of their team? I don't know how much it changes it. So the James Cook factor is there, but the other factor that's there that you've been telling me really since August last year, this running back class is insane. And obviously the first name we all think of is Jeanty, but there's so much more depth to it than that, that it almost feels like an organizational mistake if you have 10 picks and you don't take a swing on one of these guys, because this feels like one of those years where, yeah, there'll be a couple stars at the top that we're all familiar with, but 3, 4, 5 years from now, when we're on fantasy football drafts, we could be taking 5 or 6 running backs in the first 3 rounds that all come from this 2025 class. And it just feels like a team like the Bills or any team in this league should at least throw a dart, because there's some real star potential in this class.
Oh, absolutely. And the best part about the star potential in this running back class, Josh, is it's all over the board. Like, that's my favorite part. I think the running back position as a whole is going through a little bit of a revolution right now, where people are understanding where they necessarily don't want to pay the running back position. And that's, of course, what we're kind of seeing with James Cook, I imagine, and being in this stalemate that they're at when it comes to his contract situation. But overall, outside of your Barclays and stuff with perfect marriage, pay them, it works perfectly, you can't not do it. There's only 2, 3, 4 guys that are willing or worth doing that. And then the rest, you know, you just kind of fill that spot. But at the same time, it's a very valuable position that then you have all of this class coming in. And this class depicts it perfectly to me, where there's so much different forms of talent in this draft class. There's a lot of different guys that can do things differently at a very high level. I mean, the most unique one of them all is the pride and joy of Tempe, Arizona, Cam Scataboo. He is the most unicorn-like running back. He's the classic one that came out of nowhere, can do everything, puts on the greatest performance a running back has in college football playoff history. Not that it's that long of a history, but still, one of the best bowl performances we've seen in the modern era, when, especially out of a running back. I mean, it's there's a lot of things going on. I mean, you mentioned Jenty, of course, in the Heisman consideration with Cam Scataboo and Travis Hunter, the eventual winner. You have Omarion Hampton, who, in my opinion, might be my number one sneaky guy. Ashton Jenty is undeniable. He's a phenomenal downhill runner, and everything that you have with him, he's incredibly difficult to tackle, I will say as well. It helps with his size and speed on why that is the case. But Omarion Hampton has just something about him that screams NFL running back. Mm-hmm. Everything about him is just, this guy's a dude. I mean, the duo out of Ohio State, Josh, both Henderson and Judkins are very unique individuals, and they both feel very, very good for the NFL in their own capacities. Dylan Sampson's one, if we were talking Bills, if you can ignore the pass blocking problems, he feels like a Bills running back. And oh, by the way, if pass blocking is really your thing, just because I told you going into this when we talked running backs, if you are a Bills need a pass pro running back, you don't have to look very far. Just down the 90, go to Syracuse, LaQuint Allen. This guy might be the best pass blocking and blitz pickup running back in a draft class that I have no idea of where he came from, but holy shit. You watch any tape of him, picks up everything. Incredible, incredible vision on the pass pro. He seems like a Bills day three wet dream, if that's what they're looking for. But overall, I love it. I mean, RJ Harvey out of UCF's another guy, shout out. Trevor Etienne out of Georgia. I have them in my tier four. And honestly, those are guys I can absolutely see going into certain dressing rooms and making legitimate impacts in a rotation for a Bills or any other organization. I mean, there's a lot to like about a lot of individuals. I mean, Breshard Smith, Devin Neal, the list goes on and on. I love the depth of this class. I'm with you 1,000%. If you have 10 picks like the Bills do, and you're dealing with a certain situation at this position where it feels set for now, but there's a little bit of an unknown, you know, a dark cloud lingering over the position for the future, which is, spoiler alert, exactly what you draft for. This feels like an opportune time to take a swing on one, even we'll say two, and obviously the second would be late, late in the draft. But overall, there's, I mean it when I say it, there are guys that I am very comfortable with. I mean, Bahishul Tootin out of VaTech, dude can fly, and he's probably going to be sitting there in round four, five, you know, six. I don't know exactly where he's going to fall, but he can fly, and he's a dude that there's so many running backs that I could easily talk myself into that the Bills, you would find them in a great role next to Ray Davis overall. I just, there's so many guys. I mean, Cam Scataboo's at the top of the list, Josh, though. Let's just be real.
You know, one name you mentioned that was pretty interesting to me is Trevor Etienne. And he reminds me a lot of James Cook coming out of college. And it's not just because they play at the same school, but similar size, similar strengths in catching the ball, similar concerns about can he break tackles. If you're looking for somebody to come in and replace James Cook, that might be somebody the Bills were to take, like, say, in round four. Where I want to go with my next question, though, Luca, is the Bills have 10 draft picks. And I just had them in front of me. They have a first, 2 seconds, 2 fourths, 3 fifths, and 2 sixths. Where would you think that your alarm buzzer starts going off in your brain? Like, this is where the Bills could really start being serious about a running back. How early could you possibly see this team taking one?
Third. No, but actually third. Mm-hmm. And I say that because, of course, you just named off all the picks and they don't have a third, but if there's a guy they like, especially, and I'll put it in the talks of my tiers, Quinshon Judkins, if that's their flavor, Cam Scataboo, Devin Neal, Breshard Smith out of SMU. You know, we talked about Trevor Etienne, RJ Harvey. Those are guys that could all potentially slot into that area, get into that top 100 area of the draft. That, I mean, some of them are not sneaking into that place. Like, they're pretty much set in that area. But overall, if the Bills are sitting in a position as day two is dwindling down and they notice that one of those guys are there and you're sitting there with 2/4 and 3/5, you have the arsenal to trade up and go grab your guy. And that absolutely feels like the spot. Like there's just looking it over. I mean, in all reality, I'm just going to put this out there. So it's all for it. Cam Scadaboo guy here, but Cam Scadaboo doesn't scream Bills running back to me. It breaks my heart saying that, but overall, I'd love to be proven wrong. Hey, Brandon Bean, if you're listening, one, welcome.
He's more of a scat back.
Oh, Jesus.
Boom.
But it, please do, just for the sheer fun of it. But it doesn't feel like that. You know, I would say, I mean, Breshard Smith is so much fun. There's a lot of guys, though, that you could easily have the arsenal to move up into that back end of the third round, get your guy, and they can be guys that you actually like the idea of. If you have to live life beyond James Cook, this guy can step in into a role in a rotation with the likes of a Ray Davis, who you currently already have on the roster locked in, and just kind of hit the ground running from there and then reassess everything come the season now without James Cook. You know, it's one of those things that I can easily see that's where it's starting to kind of, the sensors are going off for Brandon Bean. And it's like, hey, this running back's here. I like him. Let's go get him. Move into the back end of the third round to go secure that.
Do you think that the Bills view themselves as a team that needs a running back because of the James Cook thing? Or do you think it's more of a, you know, we have another year with Cook, we're good at running back, but it's just one of those years where legitimately from about round three on, running back could be your best player available on your board because of how many there are.
It's BPA primarily. It's definitely BPA. I think this is going to be one where you always see the runs, right? When you're watching draft, there's always the runs on positions. There's going to be a serious day two run on running backs. I almost feel it. It feels like Travion Henderson, Dylan Sampson, Quinshon Judkins, Cam Scadaboo, Devin Neal, Breshard Smith. Those are six guys that I genuinely could see any team on day two falling in love with, and that's where they want him. Like, that's where they want that guy. Some of those guys could easily fall to day three. You know, primarily I would put Cam Scadaboo. Cam Scadaboo is that one that I genuinely have no idea what NFL players or scouts and front offices want, because, I mean, he was in the Heisman conversation. We all know what he did this past year. But before he went to Arizona State and he was at Sacramento State, he was a nobody. He was nothing. He was an oversized running back that wasn't really – I mean, he could break he was insulted if he tried to arm tackle him. But outside of that, it's like, what are we getting here? And then you see what he did at Arizona State. He actually took his senior year very seriously. I think that's the thing that like a Sean McDermott would love, but he was told, hey, you need to slim down a little bit. If you want to be an NFL guy, immediately does that. And you see what happens, right? He just boom, hits the ground running, literally breaks everything in front of him and is a Heisman candidate. So that's where that is. But a lot of NFL teams don't know how to look past that small school kind of just whatever mentality. It's just, what did he really go up against? Whereas a Devin Neal is kind of the opposite, where I feel like Devin Neal was looked at very highly, but he's a little bit older one and he has a little bit of an injury concern to him that it's a little, we'll see where he ends up, but all of those guys could easily be day two. All of those guys could be within, you know, 15 picks of each other. That ultimately I will be curious to see where it all falls. And that's also kind of why I think Brandon Bean trading up into the back end of the third round is very doable. Cause if he starts to see them start to go and he doesn't believe they're going to be there on day three, you have the ability to do it. And on top of it, I think there is a noticeable gap between like a Breshard Smith going into like Trevor Etienne, RJ Harvey, and then the rest. Like, There's some people that really like to talk about Jaden Blue out of Texas. He's okay. He's a day three guy.
He's a good pass catcher.
I don't know about NFL running back. You know, if you want a primarily pass catching running back, yeah, he could maybe be it for you. But ultimately, that's what I mean, though. I think if you're trying to take a swing and there's going to be a moment where it's best player available, especially at the position, overall on the board, that's where late day two, early day three, it's you're in your wheelhouse. That's that's absolutely got to be Wiz. I think the cherry on top, though, going back to your original question, Josh, cherry on top is just the looming dark cloud that is life after James Cook. And that it feels a lot more like a realistic reality now than it did, say, 2 months ago. And that's where we say it all the time. You draft for the future. So if you're really looking at the future, you need to have that safety blanket, that plan ahead, that if you're living life without James Cook, you can't pass up the opportunity of what it feels like this running back class is.
Another name you mentioned that I'm high on, is RJ Harvey. And he was much more of a pass catcher at Central Florida. I don't know what he profiles at in the NFL, but I know every time I watch Central Florida, which was a lot this year, that dude just makes plays. And maybe he becomes your new Ty Johnson if the Bills get him. But I also think he has some similarities to James Cook, just like Trevor Etienne has. I always want to call him Travis Etienne has, where I don't know that James Cook is something you have to go out and spend a first-round pick on to replace. And I think there's a lot of opportunity in this draft to get somebody that could do that if things continue to go sideways with James Cook. All right, Luca, the next two shows we do are my two favorite we do every single year. Coming up this week, Luca and I are going to be live twice in the next 10-ish days. On Friday, April 18th, Luca and I will be going live for our third annual NFL mock draft, where Luca and I will be alternating picks in the first round until we ultimately get to the Bills pick at pick 30, and we select a Bills player that we both agree on. And then after that, we'll be live for the draft. But Luca, we love the mock draft because we spend so much of draft season preparing from a Bills lens. What do the Bills need? What are the Bills going to do? And this mock draft, we haven't decided who's going to get evens or odds yet. Maybe you already know and you're just not telling me.
No, I've done.
We legitimately take on the personality of these teams and we take it seriously. We try to figure out what are they honestly trying to do. And I had the Jets last year, and there was all this talk about Brock Bowers to the Jets and how the Jets wanted Brock Bowers. And I started reading a lot of stuff on the Jets and listening to podcasts, and everything I heard was the Jets have got to address tackle if they want to protect Aaron Rodgers. And yes, they added Morgan Moses, but they still need to go out and address tackle. Jets went out and drafted a tackle and left Brock Bowers. Now, granted, maybe looking back on it, Brock Bowers is somebody you may have wanted on your team. Whoopsie daisy. But I think the mock draft show is my favorite from the standpoint of it really forces us to understand the scope of all these teams. Luca, is this also one of your favorite shows we do?
Oh, absolutely. These going mock draft show into the draft, I love everything about it. I mean, I love doing it. I will say, looking at the draft order now, I couldn't remember where one other team sat. Looks like I'm going to be the evens. You'll be the odds. So you'll be the number one pick in the Tennessee Titans. You're on the clock as of now, as we've dictated it. You are on the clock when it comes to Friday when we do our live show. But yes, I love doing this because I think the thing I love about this is I can't emphasize it enough. You said it. We care. We dig deep and we care about this. Like, we've called multiple picks head on. I mean, I'm trying to think Baltimore when it comes to Kyle Hamilton,
yeah.
The Chargers when it comes to Quinton Jefferson or Johnston. Wow, I call him Jefferson. Jesus. Whew. We're not in NFL roster mode right now, Josh. Overall, though, we've called some because you dig so deep, you read the tea leaves, you understand what's going on. I can't wait to actually start reassessing depth charts and then also listening in to where these teams are so I can actually know Quinton Johnston and not call him Quinton Jefferson. That was odd.
It shows up on the screen there. It's not showing up well, but what I'm showing you is I have the number one pick. Back in October, on October 12th, I had watched three straight Miami games in a row. I was like, I'm going to put a bet out there for $20 that Cam Ward will be the top pick in this draft. I'd seen enough of Shedeur Sanders to think there's enough in his game that NFL teams aren't going to love. $20 to win 220. Feeling nice. Pretty good about that one right now.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. That's where I'm going next week. Unless Cam Ward pulls like a Lael Collins or an Isaiah Bond before then, which don't think is going to happen.
Yeah. No, it's probably safe. Although Are you one of those individuals that thinks he's got a lot of Patrick Mahomes in him, like I've seen a little sprinkling of? Because that's ridiculous.
Anyways. What are we doing? What are we doing, folks? This is why we can't have nice things. I love Cam Ward. Stop it. Mahomes is a Mount Rushmore quarterback.
What are we doing? I think I only saw that like once or twice. And I was just like, and it was, I don't think they're from credible places. I just want people to understand. I just saw like a random clip of somewhere where someone said that. And I was like, what? You can't do, screw the fact that it's a ridiculous comp. Don't do that to Cam Ward.
Right.
What?
Cam Ward is just fine. He was a Heisman finalist for a reason. He was a great quarterback to watch for a reason. Let's not comp him to maybe the best quarterback in NFL history. Let's just slow our roll.
I see a combination of Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes in him. You know what I'm saying? Tennessee can't go wrong here.
Remember when there was like a string where every receiver that came out was comping themselves to Deebo Samuel? I see myself as the next Deebo Samuel, and yet there hasn't been another Deebo Samuel.
Deebo Samuel hasn't even been Deebo Samuel.
No, he hasn't. He's been he's been a creation of Kyle Shanahan's, and Shanahan couldn't wait to get rid of him.
Yeah, but I love how serious we take it. You know, I love digging deep, you know, and doing all of this. And it looks like, you know, Browns, Patriots, Raiders, Panthers, Bears, Cowboys, Colts, Cardinals, they're all in my future when it comes to figuring out what they're going to be doing in this upcoming draft. And then we will be doing that live on Friday, and then it'll be dropping audio at our normal podcast time. And then by the time we're doing that, Josh, I'm getting the setup ready. We're getting the setup ready. It's already posted and scheduled on our YouTube, if you haven't noticed, an upcoming live stream on April, what is that, 23rd, 24th, whatever it is, Thursday, next Thursday, for the first round of the draft, when we will be sitting behind a camera in front of the mic, just giving our live thoughts as we're waiting all the way until pick 30 for it to watch and react to what the Bills pick will be.
I'm so excited for so many reasons. I've been on a diet, and I'm going to let myself splurge that night. I'm going to get a Papa John's stuffed crust garlic pizza.
Papa John's
stuffed crust. I'm in the Midwest, folks. My options are not great, but Papa John's has good stuffed crust pizza. I'm going to go for it.
All right. Hell yeah.
Why not?
Hell yeah.
YOLO. You'll probably have like a real pizza from Buffalo. What was the thing where it was like pizza and then the sauce and then more pizza and it's like a Buffalo thing? God, I miss Buffalo food so much.
I know you like the pizza rolls. You liked, oh man. I mean, I might, honestly, maybe it's a beef on Weck and wings night.
Beef on Weck. Oh, like, oh, how good can roast beef be? Oh, it can be that good. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'll do. I'll get some Hulk Hogan Real American Beer to drink.
While
I'm also eating beef on Weck and wings.
Yeah.
Sitting there watching the draft. That could be the play.
Yeah. I'll be coming out to Buffalo again this year. I want to take my daughter out to see the stadium before they take it down. So be there you go. Having some more Buffalo food with the Lucas, probably, I would assume.
Nice.
All right. Well, for Luca, I am Josh McCarty. The next time you see us on Bills Chat, we'll be live on Friday night. Or if you happen to miss it, it'll be in the archives and on Spotify, where you can normally find your podcasts. Sorry for the day late post this week. Had some personal things come up. I got a sick kiddo on my hands. And, man, I hope he starts getting better soon. But, you know, better late than never. Not necessarily the heaviest news time of year, so we didn't want to rush an episode last night. Had some things pop up, so got it out one day late, but we appreciate you all. Next week is draft week. The Bills are going to add some youth to their roster, we hope. I mean, if they go out there and draft a 38-year-old, that would be a little bit questionable. I say that as a 42-year-old. Anyway, for Luca, I am Josh McCarty, and we will see you Friday night on our live draft show on Buffalo Bills YouTube. Please, please, please go there and subscribe. We are trying to push for 500. It is our bad. We have not been pushing the YouTube as hard as we wanted to, and we would love to get to 500 before the draft. It's kind of been a goal of ours. If you like what we do, it would mean so much to us to go out there and sub to our YouTube channel. For Luca, I'm Josh McCarty. We'll see you then.